This is the official podcast of the Oakland Raiders. Here's your host, Eddie Pascal.
So today we have a special edition of the Official Raiders podcast, and we welcome in Stephen Constantine, the manager of the Indian national soccer team. We say soccer here in the United States. So Stephen, first of all, thank you so much for taking a little time to chat with us. So what do the players call you? Do they call you coach? Do they call you Stephen? What do they call you?
It depends where I am in the world. Stephen, it will never happen. It's usually coach, boss, or mister.
Mister. All right, let's go.
Where you are in the world.
All right, well, let's go with coach. So coach.
Yeah, it works.
I think the first question is, how does a guy who grew up in London, who has traveled all around the world, who's kind of had this crazy whirlwind of a life that you have, how do you become a fan of Al Davis and the Silver and Black?
Well, I first came to the United States in 1982, and I lived in Flushing, Queens, which was quite a rough little area in New York. And a lot of my friends obviously went into football. And most of them were Jet fans or Giant fans being in New York. And one day the Silver and Black came on. And I said, oh, they look quite interesting. And they're going, no, they're the worst team in the football league. They're dirty. They're over the top. They're crazy. And I'm thinking, I grew up in London. I played as a kid for a team called Millwall. The motto for the Millwall team is "No one likes us, and we don't care." That kind of resonated with me. I'm an underdog, I think, and so it was just a natural thing for me to be a Raider fan. I mean, what Al Davis has done for the Raiders and the organization is unbelievable. That's it. I've been a Raider fan since the early 80s.
So during the early 80s, who was your favorite player?
There were quite a few. Harry Long comes to mind. Matt Millen, and the quarterback Lester Hayes. But back then they were huge. And of course, if we talk Marcus Allen that time, and the big tight end Tom Christensen, they were all my favorites.
So it seems like you chose a bunch of defensive guys there at first. Is that kind of how you manage your team? Do you manage a defensive kind of team, or are you more of a get out and go kind of guy?
Look, I think you win championships with defense. Whether it's soccer, whether it's football, it's nice free-flowing football, but if you're conceding goals or touchdowns, you're not going to win anything. So I think you build a team from the back. So the goalkeeper needs to be solid. Your two central defenders need to be solid. The two fullbacks either side need to be solid. And if you've got a solid back four, that gives you half a chance. But then, you've got to look at it from an American football point of view. I think out of the three teams that are in the last four, those three teams, the Jags, the Eagles, and the New England Patriots, I think they have the best defenses in the NFL at the moment, if I'm not mistaken. So that goes to show you that, championships are won with good defense, good defensive line, good defensive backs.
You look at Al Davis, right? And Al Davis is obviously, he's a Hall of Fame owner, Hall of Fame coach. He's had one of the most decorated, well-respected careers in American football history. And I think that one thing, especially being in the building, is that he was such a good motivator. You look at all the slogans, the "just win babies," the commitment to excellence, that kind of stuff. As a manager, as a guy who's in charge of a national team yourself, in charge of, bringing a group of men together for a common goal to win games, are you able to kind of pull anything from what Al was saying and kind of from those messages and those mantras that he preached?
I absolutely. I mean, I share that type of philosophy. I'll tell you what I tell the players. Now, you can't do this every week with a club team, but before they go out and play for the national team, I say to them every time, play today like it's the last time you're ever going to play, because maybe it is. Now, you imagine that tomorrow is the last time that you're going to play in the NFL. And, you know, in many cases, it could be. You've got to give everything you have, and you've got to leave everything on the pitch for every single second of every single play that you're in that game. And that's the same way that I approach it with in soccer. You know, this could be your last game, because maybe you get injured, maybe they don't pick you again, maybe you have a bad game, you're not selected. So you better give me everything you have, because this could be the last time. That's my feeling, and I think Al Davis was similar traits. And he was a coach, and he was an administrator, and he became an owner. I mean, it's incredible.
We're here with Stephen Constantine, the manager of the Indian national team on the Official Raiders podcast. And Stephen, we were talking earlier, and you traveled all over the world. You've managed teams all over the world. And like you said, you've been a Raiders fan since the 1980s. And one of the things that the Raiders kind of pride themselves on are being a global brand, a team that, you know, an iconic image, an iconic uniform. You know, you look at that silver and black, and you look at that shield, and it's something that resonates with a lot of people outside of the NFL, too. So in your world travels, what is the most random place you have seen someone wearing Raiders gear?
Well, I always have a bit of Raider gear wherever I go, and I have pictures of me in Pyongyang with a Raider shirt. Actually, a Raider tracksuit. It was quite fun. And if you want, I can send you the pictures. I wear Raider shirts pretty much everywhere. So I saw some guy in a hotel in India wearing a Raider shirt. And it's like, hey, you're a Raider fan? Yeah, yeah. Hey, so am I. You know, so, it's they're everywhere. London will be packed.
Speaking of London, so obviously the Raiders headed back to Tottenham, or headed back to London and play in Tottenham's brand new stadium. You know, what is that, as a London native, I mean, can you kind of just paint the picture for what that kind of scene is going to be like when the Raiders take on the Seahawks week six there?
The only problem with that particular game is the venue. It's like me telling you guys, we're going to win the Raiders, but we're going to play at the 49ers. Not happening. So I'm an Arsenal fan. And we don't like Tottenham. So I'm going to try and go to the game. Depends on my schedule, where I'm going to be in the world. But if I'm within 6,000 miles, I'm going to go to the game. The issue I will have is going into Tottenham's new stadium. But I'll bite my lip and I'll take it for the Raiders.
Do you think it's going to kind of have that Premier League type of vibe? You think it's going to be a spirited, you know, high energy kind of game?
It's going to be absolutely sold out, okay? It will be sold out, the atmosphere, because in England it's a little bit different. They will be singing from the beginning of the game, and I think it will be absolutely unbelievable atmosphere. And you know, by all accounts, the stadium at Tottenham is going to be top class, so it will be great. I think having it in such a confined space is going to make it that much more exciting, I think.
You know, over the past couple of years, the NFL has obviously made such a big push. It's been such an initiative to kind of grow the game on a global scale. You look at these games in London, and we were obviously in Mexico City last year. I mean, you know much better than us. Do you think that, what is kind of the excitement level, you know, for the state of England as football comes? And, you know, there's four games there next year. You know, are the British people ready? Are they fired up for NFL football?
Yeah, I think they are. I mean, you know, you had, I think it was the London Monarchs that was in the European league that the NFL started a few years ago. And I think, look, rugby is real big, and I mean, it's similar in some ways. The English people, the British people, they have a love for sport, and they love the physical side of things. I just think it's a no-brainer. I don't know how, though, that you get a club based out of the United States in the NFL, if you know what I mean. I heard there was, you know, maybe the possibility of having a non-US team in the NFL. I don't know if that would work logistically, but the crowd would be there, that's for sure.
You know, we're here with Stephen Constantine on the Official Raiders podcast. So, Stephen, we were talking earlier, and you said that you're actually a season ticket holder. You've been to a bunch of games here. So let me ask you this first. So where right now is home base for you, and how on earth do you make it from India to Oakland, California for a football game?
Okay, so I've been a season ticket hold up for this year. I think this will be my fourth season. I had one seat in one of the suites. I think the Hall of Fame suite, but it was a little bit too quiet for me. So I'm on the Raider side of the stadium, and I have two tickets. So how do I get there? Well, usually it's a flight from India to Dubai, and then Dubai straight to Los Angeles or San Jose the last time. And I have some friends in that area, so I either stay with them or book a hotel, and I go to the game. But I must say that after one of the games, I was walking out of the stadium, and one guy said to me, "Oh, great game! I think we had just beaten the Ravens." And he said, "Oh, good game, man." And I said, "Yeah, brilliant." And he's going, "Oh, are you English?" I said, "Yeah." And he's going, "You've come all the way from England to watch the Raiders?" And I went, "No, I came all the way from India to watch the Raiders." There was a bunch of guys there, and I was surrounded by Raider fans. It was fantastic. My wife thinks I'm absolutely nuts, but there you go.
How long is what's your total travel time from India to Dubai to San Jose to Oakland? How long is that trip take? I mean, that's got to be, what, 18 hours, 19 hours?
If you add in the stopover in Dubai, it's about 23 hours altogether.
If everything goes to plan right, it's 23 hours.
If everything goes to plan, it's 23 hours.
So I'm going to ask you to put your coach hat on for a second, right? Obviously, you've managed teams at the top level of international soccer for a long, long time. And so I got to ask you something. So the Raiders, obviously, you look at this team last year, the team underperforms. How do you kind of recalibrate? How do you reset the mechanism? Because if you look at the roster, it's largely the same players that are going to be coming back next year. How do you kind of shake something like that off and rebound to where, and to, so you rebound, and so you're playing at a level that you know you're capable of.
Okay, so if I may, and I hope nobody takes this the wrong way, I think there are one or two players that we have that did not give everything they had. I was hugely disappointed with how we lost to the Redskins. And I think our problems began in that game. Now, obviously, not being in the locker room and knowing the ins and outs of what's happening on a day-to-day basis, you know, we're looking now to John Gruden to try and do something unbelievable. There is speculation. He's been out of the game for 10 years. And I would say this, he hasn't been out of the game for 10 years. He's been studying teams, NFL teams, for the last 10 years. He has access to things that if he was a normal coach, he would not have that access. They would not give him that access. And I think he could be just the person to reignite the fire in some of the players. I'm not saying they didn't give 100%, but there were, for me, some players who weren't at their best, let's put it that way. I don't know if that answers your question.
So, speaking of Gruden, you've obviously taken over teams before. You've come in and kind of have had to instill your culture and your ideas and your philosophy on a team that's kind of, that's already been built up. You know, what are these first couple of weeks going to be like for John, just in the sense of trying to get kind of instill what he wants to on this team as a man who's done it himself with, granted, an international soccer team, but still kind of the same idea of coming in and setting a tone for what you want and what you want the expectation to be?
Well, I think the first thing that will happen is that players know that there are going to be changes. And right away, that puts the players, right, I need to put my best foot forward. I want to be part of this team. That's the first thing. As soon as it was announced that I was taking over, everybody sat up and went, this guy is motivated. This guy, he's a winner. He has the ability to change things. It's what I do. I change things. I get called by clubs or national associations who are in deep trouble or who need somebody to turn things around. And I think this is a wonderful opportunity for John. And I think players, knowing what he's like, obviously from the former players, Woodsons of the world, and there were so many former players at his press conference, that the word is out that this guy's come and he's come to win. And if you ain't with him, you're against him. And if you're against him, you're out. That's how I see it. So I think he's going to come in and say, this is what I want. This is how we're going to do it. Who's with me? And those that are not with him will be gone.
You know, speaking of kind of the challenges you've had in your career, you know, you look at the teams you've managed, Nepal, India, Malawi, Sudan, Rwanda. Was there one spot in particular that was maybe a little more challenging to come into and to kind of reset that culture and establish that philosophy that you wanted maybe than the other stops along the way?
Yeah, I think Sudan was very difficult. The culture there is, okay, we'll do it. We have the ability, but we'll do it when we feel like it. And this goes back to train. I train the way I'm going to play. So I want people to be aggressive. I want people to close down. I want the ball to play to be played quickly. I want to ask the questions of the other team. I'm not going to sit back and wait. And I think in Sudan, it was, coach, take it easy, no problem, relax, you know. And I'm like, no, I will not relax. I will not take it easy because this is my life. My family depend on my being a successful coach. And there is nothing on this earth that is going to stop me from doing that. But it was very, very challenging in Sudan. Obviously, in Malawi was also quite difficult because previous coaches or previous regimes, maybe the coach is not as fired up as me. Maybe they're not as enthusiastic. Maybe they're not as obsessed with the job as I am. I don't get up at 3 a.m., mind you, but I was in the gym at 5:25 this morning, so I've got to be in shape. The players need to know that I will go out. I will not play with them, but I can still hit a pass. I can still make a demonstration, and I need to be fit because I think that also helps you on the mental side as well.
So yeah, we're about 5 months and out now from the start of the World Cup, and you know, obviously here in the United States, a lot of disappointment. I think just disappointment is the main word that comes to mind. Obviously, the United States men's national team not going to be participating. From an outside perspective, looking in, what were the big struggles for that team this year? I mean, you go into the World Cup qualifying circuit, and there's such a sense of optimism. There's such a sense of we can build on our last performance 4 years ago, and obviously that just never came together. So if you're looking at it from your position, kind of what went wrong?
Look, I think the quality you have here in the US is immense, but I do think that they have had it quite easy in their qualifiers. I mean, you know, you can't lose to Trinidad and Tobago and expect to go to a World Cup. Perhaps there were players that were not up for it. Perhaps there were players who were a little bit overconfident. But you know, you can't take anybody for granted in sport. I mean, you don't have a good game, and the other guy has a good game, and you're done. And I think there was I think the change from Jürgen Klinsmann to
Bruce Arena. Bruce Arena.
Yeah, to Bruce Arena, I think maybe it was the wrong time to do that, in the sense that things had to change, and you were in the middle of qualifiers, if I'm not mistaken, and I don't know if the timing was right for that. You don't have, you're not working with the players on a daily basis where you can affect them that much with a national team. With a national team, you get them for 9 days, 10 days, if you're lucky. And in those 10 days, you've got to play two games. And those two games are going to either help you or kill you. And if everyone is not up for it, if everyone is not on board, or if there's a little bit of apathy, you don't play as well as you can, and then you get punished. And I think that's what happened to the U.S. So I think it's a good thing. It's a huge wake-up call. I think there's a lot of things that need to be addressed as to why they didn't go to the World Cup. And I think being here at the convention in Philadelphia, a lot of people are trying to come up with the answers for the next 4 years.
Obviously, you know, even though the United States isn't going to participate, the World Cup is still such a big event globally, right? It's kind of on par with the Olympics and something like that. So there'll be a lot of eyeballs here in the United States looking at all those games. So who do you like? Who's playing the best soccer right now internationally? Who do you think has the best shot of taking home the trophy in Russia?
Internationally, I think Germany are going to be strong. Spain be thereabouts. Argentina, maybe. They've not had such a fantastic event, but you cannot rule them out. But I can't see past Germany. I think Germany, for me, are going to be very, very strong.
So we're here once again with Stephen Constantine, the manager of the Indian national soccer team. And Stephen, we'll get you out of here on this. And once again, we thank you so much for your time. Favorite Raider player of all time?
The cornerback, Lester.
Lester Hayes?
Yeah. He was one very, very vicious, mean player. And I just love the aggressive side of it. I mean, if I ever came back in a different life, I would probably be a free safety. Because you could just line people up and lay them out.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was a very aggressive player when I played in, and I was a defensive midfield player, so I did love a tackle. Lester Hayes was just a lockdown corner. You didn't throw the ball on that side, and you had the other guy on the other side, and you had Hendricks, and there were so many players. I think it's a really unfair question, to be honest.
Well, Stephen, thank you so much for taking the time. I know you got a lot going on. You're in Philadelphia for the week, but we really do appreciate hearing from you. And hopefully we get you out to Oakland. You can come take that 23-hour flight and watch a little silver and black football next year.
Go Raiders!
Thanks for listening to this week's edition of the official podcast of the Oakland Raiders.